And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Mark J. has come down from Gainesville, but he's a longtime friend of NAVA. And it's my pleasure to introduce him to you tonight. I tell you, when I first came in the rooms, it was about 5 years ago. And when I hit meetings in Gainesville, I knew nobody there. And on Sundays, Mark would always invite me to go to get another cup of coffee after the meetings. And I look forward to that all week long. And he always made me feel like I was just part of the program from day one. And so please welcome Mark Johnson. Give him a big hand, please.
So Tim rewards me for asking me to come here and speak in front of y'all. Well, thanks, Tim. My name's Mark Johnson. I'm an alcoholic. My sponsor tells me I'm supposed to tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And he also tells me to tell you that I have a home group. My home group is a fresh air group up in Gainesville. We meet 7:30 on Saturday morning. And Saturday morning's a morning that, I don't know about you, but I like to sleep late. And I got good hooked on that. First time I went there, I kept coming back. And my sobriety date is August 17th, 1984. And my last drink was on Bennigan's on Powers Ferry Road. It's no longer there. Every time I kind of go by it, I tear up a little bit. You know? And I wish I had known that was my last drink. I was going to have my last drink there. It was just two Bloody Marys. And I met my best friend's girlfriend there, and I was coming apart, and I didn't know what was going on. And she died drunk, and I'm sober. I was the only child of the two only children. So I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth, and I was always complaining that it wasn't gold. My parents sent me off to college in a Volvo, and they should have sent me off in a Corvette. So I'm spoiled rotten. It's all about me growing up. And that's just a really good mixture to become an alcoholic. And I think from the very get-go, I always felt different. Less than, I had to always excel at. And, my dad was a career officer in the Army, so we moved around a lot. And I get friends, and then all of a sudden, we pull up, and I have to get new friends. And I would have told you when I first got sober, that's why I was an alcoholic. Today, I know that's not true. My first drink, my parents would let me drink it at home. They had a bar, and I could drink at home, but I wouldn't drink at home. I mean, I'd have a beer or two. And we lived over in Germany. There's no drinking age in Germany. I went to high school in Germany all 4 years. And they have real strong beer, and they have a lot of other stuff, too, over there. And but I like to drink beer and like to drink wine and like to drink cognac and whatever's available, really, truth be known. So my first real drunk, I was in high school. I guess I was a sophomore in high school. And my neighbor, Jack Brady, his parents sent him to Switzerland to school. And he was in the in crowd. And he came back for Christmas break. And I later realized the reason they sent him to Switzerland was because he was a wild guy. And he had a party, and we all went out drinking afterwards. And I felt like I had arrived because I got really smashed. And I don't remember coming home. I remember in the middle of the night getting sick. I had two twin beds in my bedroom. I just got another twin bed. And next morning I get up and my mom makes me breakfast, some eggs and everything, bacon. I'm eating it and have to go throw up. And, you know, she says, you're going to clean up that mattress. You're going to scrub it down, and you're going to take a hairdryer and dry it. And so that was the first consequences of my drinking. And over in Germany, you could drive at 16. There's no speed limit over there. And I guess my parents knew I needed something. So I had the driver's license, and I was the car to go to the gas houses and get drunk. And so I'd drive everybody there, and I was drinking on the weekends. I wasn't drinking every day. And I wanted to go to the University of Virginia. And I was drunk the morning I took my SATs, so I didn't do very good. So I couldn't get into the University of Virginia. So I went to a little school over in Alabama. And my dad transferred to a little army post over there, Fort McClellan, Alabama. I went to Jacksonville State, which was down the road. It was a commuter college. And a little dry county at the time, Southern Baptist. And I'm here, and I got to drink I like to drink a lot. It's hard to find people that want to drink like I do. Of course, you know, I find them. I seek them out. And I could buy beer on the post and take it off. So there was my leg up to be a friend. And, the first time I got thrown in jail was in college. We'd been out drinking, riding around a VW, and there's four of us. And when you drink beer, you got to go to the bathroom. And we're driving around, and we stop on this dirt road. All four of us get out. All of a sudden, there's a blue light. And they ask, who's driving the VW? Oh, he took off through the pasture when he saw you coming. And we all went to jail. And for a couple of us, we didn't get to do what we wanted to do when we were pulled over. The cops interrupted that, going to the bathroom. So they put us in the cell block. They put us in the cells, not in the cell block. There's a toilet in the cell block, but not in the individual cells. So a couple of them they had to go to the bathroom. So they went, and this is Old South, and they had a thing called a sweat box. They threw all four of us in this little steel box. And temperature goes up, and you're covered with sweat. It kind of broke your spirit, because we were swinging from the bars, acting like monkeys in there. You know, just having a good old time. So, you know, get out. It's $35 for public drunkenness. And go on about my business. Don't even slow down on my drinking. And the next time I get in trouble is a year later. And I have a date. And back in those days, you had to have your dates in by 10 o'clock on a school night, a weekday night. And we'd been out drinking, and I dropped her off. I've been drinking beer, and I got to go to the bathroom. So I'm speeding to get back to my apartment to go to the bathroom, and I get pulled over. And I'm having to hold on to the car and walk back to talk to the cop, and I get a DUI for that. And back then it was $105, and no big deal. Back in the good days, I guess, or the bad days, I don't know. And, you know, I started dating this gal in college, and her dad was a police chief of a local town nearby, and every Sunday I had to go to the church with them, Southern Baptist Church. And back in those days, the big issue was they were going to build a raceway at Talladega, and the whole church was up in arms because there's going to be liquor sales. You know, I'm sitting there going, yeah, they shouldn't do that. You know, I kind of flow whichever way the breeze is flowing there to fit in. Because I tell you, when I got here, I had a face for my marriage. I had a face for work. I had a face for this friend, face for that friend. I didn't know who I was, you know. And that's part of the gift that sobriety has given me. I found out who I am and what I really want in life. And I can be comfortable in my own skin, which I could never be before. But somehow or another, I started dating this gal. And we've been going together for a long time. And these three hippie chicks wanted to move in with me. I made a bad decision. And, of course, and they moved in. And a couple of weeks later, I kicked them out and said, my girlfriend already rebounded. And, man, my drinking took on. I started drinking morning, noon, and night. I'd wake up and start drinking. And one of my buddies came by and he said, "Man, you're killing yourself." And he threw a bag of pot at me and he said, "Try this." And the only reason I say this is AA, is it changed how I drank. Instead of being a daily drinker, I was I'd drink at certain times. And if I drank hard liquor, I'd black out just about every time at the end. So I started smoking pot, and I got Dean's List. And that's kind of an oxymoron. I don't know how that worked out. But I was also, because my dad was in the military, he made me go take ROTC, and I graduated as a second lieutenant. I had to go down to Benning. And, you know, when you're in the Army, drinks are 35 cents. Yeah, that was okay. You know, I'm drinking like a fish. And Vietnam's just starting to wind down. My dad was over in Vietnam. He told me to delay my graduation for a year. I really wanted to delay it for about 10 years and have a little bit more fun. But I delayed it a year, and they didn't need any second lieutenant targets. They said, "Well, we got a plan for you. 90 days active duty, 8 years reserve." And I said, "Where do I sign?" And, you know, I did that and came to Atlanta to make fame and fortune. Well, after girlfriend number one, who rebounded quickly on me, I started dating this girl from Cullman, Alabama, country girl. And I was smoking pot and drinking, and we were been going together for a while. And she said, "Why don't you give up that pot?" I said, I'll give you up before I'll give up this pot." I graduated, and she had a year longer than me. I came to Atlanta after I got out of the Army, and I started. I met this hippie chick and started dating her. I went to work for a top corporation, GE. And one day, out in my car, there was a note. It was from the girl from college. And she wanted to go out with me. And she worked for the same company in the computer center. And I looked at the hippie chick and looked at her and looked at the hippie chick and looked at her and said, "I think I'll go with her." You know, she didn't drink. I guess I was looking for somebody to take care of me, the truth be known. I probably didn't know it at the time, but, yeah. And I proposed the way they do up in New York City, and that is, "You are what?" Yeah. You know, I'm not going to make a decision. I'm not going to change anything there. I'm going to go with the least amount of commitment. And I've learned that I have to commit to a lot of things these days. So we get married, and she has a miscarriage. And that poor gal put up with a lot from me. We were married for 13 years, And we had a daughter. When I got sober, she was 3 years old. She's 31 now. She doesn't remember me drinking. What a miracle. So, I'm coming back from... I'm a sales guy. I like to be on the road because I can go to bars and do a lot of different things. So I'm on the road. And I'm coming back from Huntsville, Alabama. And I was at this place. It's torn down now. It's called Cheers. And, I got really drunk, and I had a customer over there, and the next morning I took him out to lunch, and I have to stop in Arab, Alabama, and snort some crystal meth to be able to make it back, because I can barely drive. And I come home, and all my married life to this woman, I've always wanted to be single. If I just wasn't married to her, man, there's so many things I could do out there. And she wants me to move out. She's tired of my BS, my running around, my not being there, not participating in the marriage. Because this will... I wasn't a raging alcoholic. I'd be sitting there watching TV. I'd look over at her on the couch, and she'd be crying. I'd say, "What are you crying about?" She said, "I've been trying to talk to you." And I'd say, "Well, wait for the commercials." And she says, "I have." And that's the nature of my sins there. Not so much commission. There's more omission, just not there. And for some reason, when she wanted me to move out, I became a clinging vine. I didn't want to move out. Just tell me you want me to do something, I'm going to do something else, even if I want to do it. But anyway, for some reason, I quit drinking. I started tapering off and quit drinking. And, by the way, at that time, my dad had gotten 7 years of sobriety. He'd gone to a treatment center over in north of Birmingham, and, God, he needed to go to a treatment center. He was bad. My mom would call me up, and I'd go over there. It was an Easter egg hunt through the house, finding bottles. Now, when you find half-gallon bottles of vodka, you can't pour them out, can you? No, I took them home. I never drank vodka before, but I started drinking vodka. And so he'd gotten sober. I remember going visiting there one weekend. And this is how keen my mind is. He's there for alcoholism. I can't go in there drinking because they'll smell it on my breath. So I'll smoke a couple joints before I go in there. You know, little did I know 7 years later I'd be going through the same place on that. So at my end, I call my dad. I'm a week clean, no drugs, no liquor, nothing. And I'm putting a gun in my mouth, wanting to kill myself, but not having the courage to. And playing with the trigger, pulling the slack out of the trigger. Today, I just thank God I didn't do that. I would have missed so much of my life. And I went over there, and he said, "I got a place for you where it'll even out the highs and lows." And I said, "But Dad, I'm not an alcoholic." And he said, "Well, it'll even out the highs and lows." And I was desperate. So I went over there, and I thought it was going to be a 30-day program. They kept me for 42 days. I guess I had good insurance back those days. Yeah. And it was a hardcore treatment center. I had to sign a contract when I got out that I'd have a sponsor in 30 days. I'd go to so many AA meetings And because I did some drugs every now and then, every other day, I'd go to NA on there. And this is classic. My soon-to-be ex-wife comes to pick me up. And I'm in this cottage with all these guys. I'm looking at her and looking at these guys, and I want to be with the guys because she's angry, real angry, and had every right to be real angry. And we start going to marriage counseling. I want to make this marriage work, by gosh. And we're going to be a happy family. So the first night out, I look up and I call the central office, and they say, well, Five Forks Sobriety Group meets at St. John Newman's Church at 8 o'clock. Back in that day, it met at 8:30. They did a mistake. And being a good alcoholic that I am, I got there at 7:30. And I'm going through the church hunting for this meeting, and there ain't a meeting. And I go, I can't find anybody. And I go back out to my car. I'm in tears. Damn, I can't even go to AA right. You know? And then there's this guy come walking up with a big book in his hand. I get out of my car and follow him in. And there's only about 12 people at this meeting. And they assign me a temporary sponsor. Now, my gosh, I've been sober for about, it was a little over a week when I went into the treatment center. They kept me for 42 days. So I'm about 55 days sober. I shouldn't need that, should I? Boy, did I ever need that. And they gave me Jerry O'Brien. He's dead now. And he was my temporary sponsor. They wanted me to call him every morning. I said, what am I going to say to him? He said, why don't you say good morning? How are you doing? So that's why. And then the other thing they told me at this meeting was, why don't you hit your knees and ask God in the morning to keep you sober? And I said, I don't know if I believe in God. But I'll tell you this. You throw me in the back of a squad car, I start praying. You know? And I got another DUI after 20 years here in DeKalb County on 85. But, you know, the group was great. And, you know, after about 2 weeks, I asked this guy to be my sponsor. And he started taking me through the steps. I was praying every morning, asking God to keep me sober. And he started giving me stuff to read in the morning, meditational stuff. Back then, Daily Reflections wasn't there. They gave, from the treatment center, they gave me a 24-hour day book. And I was reading that every day in the morning. And the marriage wasn't working. And I'm on step three. And I'm waiting for the lightning bolt. There ain't no lightning bolt. And I've always looked for lightning bolts. I wanted to have the experience that Bill Wilson did. And that has not been my experience here. It's been very slow in the educational one, like it says in the appendix of the big book. So it's Halloween. I'm taking my daughter, who's 3 years old, out trick-or-treating. I see all these families that are happy. And we ain't happy in my house, especially me. And, man, I go back, and she's just mad as can be. And I still have a bottle of Jack Daniels, and I'm going to drink it to show her, you know. That's my mode of operandi, make her feel guilty. And for some reason, I didn't drink it. I poured it out. I talked to my sponsor, and he said, you need to do a four-step. Now, this sponsor, he wasn't working the way I thought it should work. I go in there. I'd be complaining about something. He said, well, I want you to chair the meeting for this month. And then we all want you to go over and chair this other meeting. And along that time, he also said, CJ over there, he doesn't have a driver's license. I want you to taken to meetings because you still have a driver's license. I said, and he said, don't talk to him too much. We don't want to mess him up. So I'd take him to meetings. I'd have to listen to him whine. And, that was the best thing for me. Chairing those meetings. My sponsor would always tell me, if I don't feel a part of, chair a meeting. Yeah. So we sit down to do this four step. He sits down and shares a good bit of this four step with me. So I kind of get the gist of the thing. He does the outline out of the big book. And, I still have that four step and where he outlined it for me. And we set a date. And at that time, I worked for a company on the other side of Atlanta, in Fulton Industrial. I lived up in Lilburn. It was an hour commute if traffic was good. If it wasn't, But Sunday, I'd sit down. Well, I'm going to do my four step. I don't know about you, but my mind goes blank. But I'll tell you what, driving in that traffic, I can think of everything that I have a resentment over. So I put a tablet there on the armrest and was just writing like crazy as I was driving through Atlanta. And when it was ready to do it, I was ready. And I had everything down there that I could think of at that time. And we sat down and we did the fifth step. And he said, you know, I feel the presence of God. And I told him, I said, I don't know what I feel. Yeah. But I'm going to tell you what, that step worked for me because I've never come close to drinking again. Never. And in subsequent fourth and fifth steps, being on the other side of the table or being on the same side of the table, I've felt the presence of God in there, an overwhelming presence. And I got divorced. And my sponsor was pushing me through the steps, and he said, I want you to make amends while you're still married to her. Oh, man. This is not going to go good. And he said, I don't care. I don't care if it goes good or not. You're going to do it. And he said, I want you to start praying about that. Now I got ready to do it, and I sat down and talked to him about what I was going to say and what I was going to make my amends for. And we're really clear about that. And it was in a general way because, you know, I cheated on her and did a lot of things, and I wasn't going to bring those episodes up. He said, that's not what the spirit of the step is. So I made my amends, and she said the strangest thing to me. She said, you know, I like you better drinking than I do sober. And it's like, oh, God, the quality of my sobriety is shining through. And she was right. I went to my sponsor. I said, you know, I told her what she said, and he said, she's right. And I don't know about for y'all, but alcohol and a little pot every once in a while kind of took the edge off, and I could function out there. I think that it saved my life long enough to get here, to get sober in there. And, I have a good relationship with that woman today. But as I was moving out, the BMW 7 Series moved into my spot in the garage. And it was her boss from work. And He was there for 20-some-odd years, but he was a nasty alcoholic, a raging alcoholic. I think she just likes alcoholics. I don't know. But my daughter had to grow up in that. But, I had her every Wednesday night, every other weekend, and a couple of weeks in the summer, and a couple of days at Christmas. And I was always there. my sponsor drilled that in my head. Even if it's inconvenient, you keep your commitments. I'm so glad he did that. So after being single in AA, I remember coming up here, I had about 14, 15 months, and you all have a great dance on New Year's Eve. I came up here, and, you know, I'm single. Well, I need to be in a relationship. Yeah. I don't really need to be in a relationship because I don't even have a relationship with myself. That's quoted from my sponsor. I came up here to this dance, and you know, there's some beautiful women here, and you know, I'm talking to this buddy of mine from Lilburn, and we're sitting there theorizing that if we have as many months sober as we have years drinking, we'll have arrived. So for me, I drank for 21 years. So when I have 21 months, we were so full of crap, we didn't know what was going on on that. I started going around. And my sponsor would tell me stuff like, you're going to find out more about yourself from the women you date. And he was exactly right. I started finding out things about me, what I really wanted in life, who I wanted to be with. And you know, I was dating some beautiful women, and I couldn't stand them and everything. And then and you'd think if you're dating beautiful women, that's the way my mind works. Messed up. Because when I got sober, I owned a couple of houses. I had money in the bank. Had sports cars. Had everything on the outside looked right. But what was in the inside, there was nothing there. It was rotten. It was empty. And the liquor had stopped the wind from blowing through my gut for a while, but man, when you get sober, it's hurricane level going through there. Getting sober is a very emotional thing. It was for me. I don't know about y'all, but it was very emotional for me. I didn't have a pink cloud. And now I know it was perfect the way I got sober. I can see that God's hand was in everything on this whole thing. If I look back over my shoulder, I can see how I was guided every step of the way in every decision that was made. Even though the ones that seemed bad turned out to be some of the best lessons I've ever learned in there. But I met this gal at a really good meeting. It was adult children of alcoholics. Sickest of the sick. And I saw her across the way, and she saw me, and man, you know, I started dating her, and we ended up getting married. And at that time, I was 41 years old, and she was like 32. She wanted to have kids, and I wanted to have a family at that time. And I'd gotten to the point where I really knew what I wanted. And I wanted to raise some kids. And she got pregnant right away. We had this little boy. And it's over in Northside. And had difficult delivery. He looked beautiful. We had him in the room, and all of a sudden I noticed his legs were purple. I take him down to the nursing station. He goes into intensive care unit for kids. He doesn't make it. And he lives for 7 weeks, and we have to pull the plug. And every day I was there at the hospital. Never thought about drinking. Isn't that a miracle? That's a huge miracle. And then, gosh, when we let him go, were there. And again, I felt the presence of God. As solid as this podium here. Yeah. Now, the silver lining to this is we had two more kids after that. He would have been an only child. We had two more kids. And that's great. And in the meantime, I'd gotten this job with one of my roommates in college. I was his national sales manager. He had a small machine shop. I guess I'd been sober 9 years, and he was in the Department of Defense racket, making parts for bombs and for missiles and stuff like that. And I'd gone out to California. I was coming back, and I had an $11 million contract in my briefcase. And I'm up in first class, and they're going around with a wine bottle. And the thought comes, you know, you deserve a drink for this. Now, when my son's dying, I'm not thinking about drinking. When good things are happening, all of a sudden, I'm trying to take credit for something that God has given me. And it was a fleeting thought. It just came, and then the thought was, you're still a good alcoholic. You still have an alcoholic mind. Because I truly believe it centers in my mind. There. So, by the way, this guy, Jay, that I'm hauling to the meetings, my roommate gets married, and I need a roommate. He moves in. And I've known him for 26 years. We're like brothers. Now, the sad thing about Jay is the longest he's been sober 9 years twice. And right now he's going through a tough time in his life. And, you know, we support each other in that. And, you know, we talk about the times when we lived together and how it was a magical time in there. And I always say, yeah, the living room was right below my bedroom, and he was a smokestack at that time. He's a chain smoker. And he'd come up through the floor into my bedroom. I wasn't a smoker, just pot. I wasn't, no cigarettes. On that. But, you know, the miracle of this program is the people I meet and the wonderful things that have happened in my life, the glimpses that I have of God, and I have more friends than I can handle. I can't keep up with everybody. There's not enough time in the day. And, you know, I had a lot of guilt with my mom, and I made amends with my mom before she died. And I always thought, because I lied to her a lot. She lived in Birmingham and always wanted me to come over and see her. When I was drinking, I'd make my wife lie to her that, you know, I had to work, or, you know, had to work is always a good lie, right? I got sober, and I started going over there once a month. I'd take my daughter over there, her only grandchild, and I'd go over there. And I sat down with her, and I made my amends. And she didn't want to. She said, you don't need to do that. I looked at her, and I said, yeah, I do. I need to do that. I need to set this right. And when she died, it was okay. I didn't feel any guilt. And, you know, that's a miracle. That thing. I guess about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I got a divorce from this woman I married that we had two children from. What happened is we both had changed. And you know, we'd gone to marriage counseling, and the marriage counselor said, you both need to go to Al-Anon. I said, Al-Anon? What are you talking about? And I ended up going to Al-Anon. She didn't, but now she goes. But anyway, we got divorced. And the marriage counselor told me, said, "Mark, you got to let her grow up." Because we were in there and the marriage counselor said, "What do you want from him?" And she said, "I can't tell him because he'll give it to me." And that speaks volumes both ways, I think, on there. But anyway, the marriage counselor finally said, "How long are you going to go through this torturing yourself?" And my thought was, as long as it takes. And she said, "Why don't you let her grow up?" And I said, "I guess I can do that." She said, you're keeping her from growing up on that. So we got divorced, and I'm going to meetings. I moved into an apartment, and a bunch of my buddies moved me in there. And she gets a big house up on the lake, and the other wife got the big house, and I got a rental house. But it all worked out good. It worked out perfect. But anyway, I'm going to the meetings, and I'm up on the square, and there's this lady there. And she's been going to AA. I've seen her around, and she just got a divorce a year or two ago. And we're talking, and she's, I said, "Are you dating anybody?" And she said, "No." I said, "Can I get your phone number?" And a miracle happened. She gave it to me. And we started dating, and then we moved in. And my daughter got really angry with me because we were living in sin. And she's kind of gone way over to the other side on Christianity. And, you know, and I have three granddaughters by her now. And they love me. And we got married about a year and 10 days ago on the beach in Florida. And, you know, just a small wedding. And you know, she's been sober 24 years. We go to AA. We sponsor a lot of people, each one of us. And we're immersed in the AA community up in Gainesville. And my life's better than it's ever been. And I guess, if anything I want to leave with you is, for me, I continually, it's like when I fly. I fly a lot. And every once in a while I'll get upgraded to first class because I'm a platinum medallion, and some of these routes I keep getting upgraded. And it seems like since I've come to AA, I keep getting upgraded in stuff in life and marriages. And just experiences with people. Yeah? I'm sitting there going, this is great. But the deal is, when this woman said, "I want a divorce," I'm sitting there going, "Oh, this is terrible." Well, it really wasn't. It really turned out to be a great thing. It's like when that cop pulled me over on 85. She was an angel that saved my life. Because I was coming out of a blackout. And I had to ask her, "Why you pulled me over?" And she said, "You were weaving a little bit." In my mind, that's no reason to pull you over, is it? You know? I had a little puke on my front of my shirt. You know? So, but I'm so grateful for her. The thing I got out of that is I went to court, and this is back when MAD was huge. I guess it still is. I don't know. I haven't been to court since. And they were wanting to roast me, and my lawyer was roommate with a solicitor for DeKalb County, and he said, "We'll fix it where you won't lose your driver's license. You won't have to go to those damn meetings." So, I don't think they were doing that back then. But, you know, I went to DUI school. And the thing I got out of that is you can have two drinks and you pass the sobriety test. That was what drove the stake through my heart. I could not have just two drinks. And Yeah. I tried to control, and I couldn't. And, boy, that's a terrible place to be. It really is. But it's a great place to be come to AA. So I got here, and drinking wasn't working, and not drinking wasn't working. Perfect time to get to AA. Well, it's 5 minutes. I'm gonna leave you with that and let. Where are you, Tim? Okay, back there. Thanks for asking me. Thank you all for.
That's how it's done, folks. Julie? Thank you, Mark. That was fantastic.
Hi, I'm Julie. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Mark. It was wonderful. We have a chip system here at the Blue Chip Speaker Meeting that denotes our time in sobriety. We have a white chip for anybody who wants to try our way of life. Just for a day. Come in out of the cold. See what it's like. Anybody want a white chip? All right. This new speaker system is great. It's like sounds better at your side. 30-day chip is silver. Does anybody have 30 days? How about 90 days? Does anybody have 90? Yay! Anybody else? 90 days? How about 6 months? A yellow one. Anybody have 6 months? We'll give you a green one if you have 9 months. Anybody have 9 months? No sudden movement. How about a birthday? Anybody have a birthday we don't know about?
My name's David, and I'm an alcoholic. I did this by remembering what it was like, not forgetting what it was like. And by maintaining a relationship with my fellowship. But most importantly, after 25 years or so of consequences, finally having a relationship with a God of my understanding. And that's what I think is making the difference. Thank y'all.
Thanks, David. How many? Yeah. All right. First year. There you go, buddy.
Anybody else have a year? All right, we'll offer the white chip again. Does anybody want to reconsider and come into our way of life just for a day? All right, congratulations. Good job.
Thank you, Julie. Okay, it's time for AA-related announcements, followed by NAVA Club announcements. Mike, please raise your hand. If you have a sheet that needs to be signed and he hasn't gotten it, catch up with him right after the meeting. And July 4th, we're having a big barbecue after the 11 o'clock meeting. That breaks at 12, and then it's a potluck. So if you want to bring something, we have sign-up sheets. So you can sign up and give us an idea about what you're bringing, and we'll try to balance it all out. It's going to be a nice day of celebration, July 4th here. Saturday night, the Acoustical Coffee House was a great event. So if you happen to miss it, we are going to be doing it again in about two and a half, three months, somewhere in there. Food is great. Entertainment's better than ever. What else we got? All right, let's close this. If there's no further announcements, I remind you that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles for personalities. For those who will, please join hands in the Lord's Prayer. Let's have just one more moment of silence for those suffering inside and outside of this room. It always makes a great need.
Lord art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thank you. Well, my head was in tomorrow, and my feet followed history. I had an insane notion I could hoodoo everything around me. No. 'Cause too much of